What's ahead for our property markets? If you're like most homeowners or property investors, you'd probably give your second garage to know what's in store now that our markets seem to have moved to the next stage of the property cycle. Sure, the markets are still booming, but there seem to be more headwinds ahead, with inflation creeping up, the continual media speculation that interest rates are going to rise sooner rather than later, and APRA once again interfering in our housing markets. Well, in light of that, in today's show, I'm going to answer the question, where should you buy your next investment property? And even if you're not planning to buy another investment in the near future or a home anytime soon, I think the answers that I gave to a journalist recently, which is what I'm going to discuss today, I think those answers are going to be insightful for anyone interested in property. Now, if you're a new subscriber to my podcast, welcome. And if you're a regular subscriber, you know that I generally have guests on this show, but once a month or so, I like to have a chat, just me and you, as I get my message across, my thoughts across to you a little bit better. And this is going to be one of those shows. I'm also going to be sharing my popular mindset message with you, where I'm going to share a number of things I wish I would have known, things I would have liked to have known at the beginning of my investment journey that would make things very different today. So welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialize in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
If you had $1 million to spend, where would you invest in Australia in property today? Where and what would you buy? And why? And what would your answer be if you only had $500,000 to invest? Well, these were questions recently posed to me by journalists, and I can understand why. They're common questions investors are asking today, and they make great headlines for his articles. Everyone would like to know how to find that special location that's going to outperform the averages, or the right property in that location that's going to be the stepping stone to a substantial property empire. But I'm afraid my response disappointed the journalist, because I didn't answer his questions. Now, I wasn't surprised by the request. I found that most property investors start their journey trying to choose a top location or trying to find a property that's going to make a great investment. However, when you look at the results that most investors achieve by asking these type of questions, it makes little sense to invest the way that they do or ask the questions that they're asking. You've heard me say it before. Statistics show that around 50% of all those people who get in property investment sell up in the first 5 years. And of those who stay in the market, the statistics clearly show that 92% of investors never get past their first or second investment property. So if you want to outperform the average investor, if you want to develop financial freedom through property investing, then don't start by doing what those other investors do. Don't start by selecting a location, looking for a location, or looking for that ideal property. You see, property investing is a process, not an event. Things have to be done in the right order, and selecting the property comes right at the end of the process. The property you will eventually buy will be the result of a sequence of questions you're going to need to ask, questions you're going to need to answer, and a series of decisions you're going to need to make before you even start looking at locations. Long before we talk about a property or the right location with our clients at Metropole, we look at factors that include their age, their timeframes, their desired end result. In other words, what do they really want their properties to do? Are they looking for cash flow? Are they looking for capital growth? Are they looking for a combination of both? And that's because what makes a great investment property or a great location for me is not likely to be the same as what would be for you, what would suit your investment needs. So it all starts with us by helping our clients formulate a strategic plan, which takes into account their surplus cash flow position, their risk profile. For example, would they consider undertaking renovations or a small development? We have to look at factors like where they're living at the moment. Is their current home where they want to keep staying? Do they even own a home? Are they looking at upgrading a home or maybe downgrading in the future or losing one income for a while they have a baby? We look at factors like What other investment properties do they own? Where are those located? How are they performing? Plus about 35 other considerations in putting together a strategic property plan. So my first recommendation to anyone asking where they should invest is to sit with an independent property strategist to formulate their plan. Now, I know some of you are going to say I'm biased, but in my mind, it's just too difficult to do on your own, and I've found that most investors tend to be too emotionally involved to see their situation objectively. And the benefits of formulating such a plan include, well, it's going to help you define your goals. You're going to discover whether your goals are realistic, especially for your time frame, because a lot of people's goals aren't. You're going to find out what you've done right so far, what you've done wrong along your financial journey, and boy, we've all made mistakes. I've made more than my share. And we're also going to be able to discover what you can do about it. And then you're going to be able to measure your progress towards your goals, whether your property portfolio is working for you or not, whether you're working for it. And it'll also help you identify risks that maybe you hadn't thought of. So in my mind, by following a documented plan, the real benefit is that you're going to be able to grow your wealth through property investment faster and more safely than the average investor without making all those costly mistakes along the way. But there are three important parts to your investment equation. When you invest in property, there are really only three major levers you can pull. Your budget, that's usually determined by the banks. Location, and in my mind, you can't afford to compromise on that. And then the right property in that location. And unless you've got an unlimited budget, and that applies to very few of us, investors usually need to compromise on at least one of those factors. Now, before I get into location more, I just want to explain that I believe we're into a two-tiered property market moving forward. While most property markets around Australia have performed really strongly this cycle, well, other than the inner city CBD apartment market, it's important to realise that moving forward, we're likely to have a two-tier property market. In other words, not all property segments are going to continuously grow. They're not going to grow as strongly as others moving forward. In my mind, properties located in the inner and middle ring suburbs, particularly the gentrifying locations of our capital cities, are going to outperform cheaper properties in the outer suburbs. Now, I know the outer suburban cheaper properties did well at the first stage of this cycle, but now moving forward as affordability constraints are going to kick in, that's not going to be the case. More than that, COVID-19 has adversely affected lower income earners. It's affected them to a greater extent than middle and high income earners, who are likely to recover their income back to pre-pandemic levels much more quickly. Some of them haven't been hit at all, and you probably read in my blogs that Australians overall are wealthier than they ever have been. Also, with regard to the two-tier property market, I believe high-rise towers in our CBDs, those apartment towers, which were already suffering from adverse publicity about their structural problems prior to COVID, they're now going to become the slums of the future as they're shunned by more homeowners and investors. And as we start to emerge from our COVID cocoons, there's going to be a flight to quality properties, and there's also going to be an increased emphasis on livability. You see, as their priorities change, some buyers are going to be willing to pay a little bit more for properties with pandemic appeal, but with a little bit more space, a little bit more security. And it won't just be the property itself that'll need to meet their newly evolved needs. A livable location is going to play a big part in that too. And to many, livability will mean a combination of proximity, you know, to things like parks, shops, amenities, good schools, mobility, access to good public transport, or a good road system, and access to jobs. So back to the original question, what makes a great location? Well, it's very difficult to answer because it all depends on you. What do you want out of your property investment? It's impossible to say this location, this particular location, is perfect for everybody. If you've been following my blogs and my podcast, my video, you'd know that I believe residential real estate is a high growth but relatively low yield investment. And that's why I'd only be looking for locations that are likely to outperform the averages with regard to capital growth over the long term. But I do recognise that most investors still need sufficient cash flow to service their debts, so yield is an important factor to take into account when you choose a location. So when selecting a location, I would initially start by eliminating locations. For example, I wouldn't be investing in regional Australia or in our smaller capital cities. Now, there's no doubt that some better performing regional locations and certain suburbs in our small capital cities are going to outperform the poorer performing suburbs of our three big capital cities. But when I suggest you should only consider investing in Australia's big three capital cities, I'm also saying it's really important to be selective in choosing the right suburbs in these cities, investment-grade suburbs that are going to outperform. But rather than looking in the rear vision mirror at what's already happened, I look for leading indicators, things that are going to indicate what's likely to happen in the future. So I look for locations where there's going to be strong economic growth, which is going to lead to wages growth and eventually population growth. But more than that, I look for affluent people and affluent demographic who are going to be able to and prepared to pay more to buy in those suburbs. And also tenants who live in those suburbs are going to be able to pay more for the rent and pay increasing rent. And in the future, if you want to live off the investment returns of your property portfolio, you're going to want tenants who can afford to pay more rent moving forward. So you don't want to invest in areas where tenants are only a week or two away from broke. So again, we're looking for areas where there's affluence. The fact is, I don't like fighting the big trends. Why fight with the gorilla? Other important drivers of capital growth are going to include supply and demand, infrastructure, livability, which I've mentioned before, and amenity. Now, over the years, I've noticed that experienced investors find it easier to choose a location. They're not as emotionally attached to locations as they've learned from their mistakes of the past. On the other hand, many beginning investors, they want to invest close to where they live, in the suburbs they're familiar with, or where they want a holiday, or where they eventually want to retire. Obviously, these are emotional reasons to choose a location rather than basing decisions on data. So one of the first questions I'd suggest you ask yourself when looking for a location is, how far are you willing to invest from home? Now, clearly, the further you're prepared to consider, the better your potential returns, because you're going to have the whole of Australia open to you. But if you're only prepared to invest in your own backyard, your choices are going to be much more limited. Now, there's lots of suburbs in Australia, but there are only about 3,800 statistically reliable suburbs nationally. And in my mind, only very few of these make investment-grade suburbs, one that are going to outperform the averages with regard to capital growth. So how do you find that location that's going to outperform? I recommend you look for an area that's had a long proven history of strong capital growth, but that's not enough. You've also got to find one that's likely to continue to outperform the averages. Now, that's very different from looking for the next hotspot or the next big thing, as many investors do. I want to find an area that's always worked, not just one that's working now. And as you dig into the data, you're going to find that not all land's created equal. Some suburbs will be more popular than others. Some areas will have more scarcity than others. And over time, some land will increase in value more than other blocks of land, areas, locations. Of course, these are the properties you as a property investor should target, as that's where you're going to get above average capital growth. And you're going to find, as I mentioned a moment ago, top performance has a lot to do with the demographics in the area. These suburbs tend to be where there's a larger percentage of owner-occupiers, where they want to live because of lifestyle choices, not because that's the only place they can afford to live. And I look for suburbs where wages and therefore disposable income are increasing above average. And these tend to be one of two sorts of suburbs, either what I like to call discretionary suburbs, the most expensive established money suburbs in our capital cities, those locations where the residents have lived for a long time, where many residents have paid off their home loans years ago. These in general are going to be the inner ring established suburbs of our capital cities or suburbs close to the water. Over the long term, this segment has always outperformed other sectors of the market. And as we move forward and affordability becomes more of an issue to many Australians, as property values increase but wages don't go up as much, people who can afford to live in these discretionary suburbs, I guess that's why they're called that, they've got enough money to choose discretionarily to live there, they're not going to run out of money. There's always going to be people who want to pay to live in those suburbs or for their children to. Now, of course, not everyone can afford to buy at this end of the market, so strategic investors often look to invest in the next round of suburbs, the aspirational suburbs, the upper middle class areas and gentrifying locations of our big cities. These are the suburbs where many of the more affluent millennials are now aspiring to move to as they're entering their family formation stage of their life. when this wealthier demographic moves into a suburb, it translates to actually moving the locals, some of the older locals, out, and these younger millennials are able to and prepared to pay a premium to live there. And that puts a floor under the value of your properties in that area. As you wander through those suburbs, you're going to see the changing nature of the suburb with new developments, new infrastructure, new shops, the different quality of services for the residents. All that's going to drive economic and jobs growth in those locations. So when you're looking for a location, consider the discretionary locations or the aspirational locations. On the other hand, I'd avoid investing in the more affordable locations. Now, I know that's not what everyone tells you, but you shouldn't be doing what everyone else does, otherwise you'll get the same results they do. I would avoid investing in the more affordable locations, as that end of the property market, it has underperformed over the long term with regard to capital growth and rental growth, but will do more so now as affordability issues are going to be a constraint at this stage of the property cycle, where wages in those locations have hardly gone up at all. So therefore, they're going to underperform moving forward with regard to capital growth and also rental growth. In those areas, many of the owners are young families. They've stretched themselves to their financial limits to get there, and many of the tenants are only a week or two away from broke. Avoid those locations. You've heard me say it before, and I've mentioned it a couple of times today already, that I believe a group of people are going to be able to and afford to and want to pay a premium to live in the right neighbourhoods. You see, if coronavirus has taught us anything, it is the importance of living in the right property in the right neighbourhood. And in our new COVID normal world, where we know it's not all going to go away, we know it's going to now be endemic, part of the community, as opposed to, I guess, a pandemic or a big disease, people are going to be prepared to pay a premium for the ability to work, to live, to play within 20 minutes, I don't know, drive, bike ride, or walk from home. I mentioned it a little bit a moment ago. They're going to look for things like shopping, business services, education, community facilities, recreation, sporting resources, and jobs, all within 20 minutes reach, not of the CBD, of where they want to live. Residents of these neighbourhoods have now come to appreciate the ability to be out and about on the street, socialising, supporting local businesses, being involved with local schools, enjoying the local parks. So neighbourhood is going to be very important, and a 20-minute neighbourhood is going to be a critical factor for a lot of people's decision. It's going to be very, very difficult to do this in the outer suburbs where the infrastructure isn't right for this. But having talked about location for so long now, I just want to make it also clear that location isn't the only thing that's important. While I believe that 80% of your property's performance is going to be related to its location, the other 20% or so is related to buying the right property in that location. Even in the best suburbs, there are some properties I'd avoid. They just don't make good investment sense, and others I'd be keen to have in my portfolio. So I believe all properties can be classified as A, B, or C grade properties. A grade properties, homes, or investment grade properties, the type of assets you want to own, the type of properties that'll get great tenants, that's where they want to live, not because they need to, but because they want to and they're prepared to pay extra to live there. A-grade homes are not just homes, but also family-friendly apartments in the right locations, not high-rise apartment towers, but apartments, big ones with courtyards, with balconies, in small walk-up blocks, not with large amount of common facilities. There are also B-grade homes in every location, and they still have a lot going for them. And during the hot property markets, like we've been experiencing much of this year, they still perform well. But their secondary location in the suburb or their less than perfect attributes mean that when the market turns, and it eventually will, you don't want to get stuck with the wrong property when there's harder to find tenants and harder to find buyers and values aren't going to go up. So I'd be buying A-grade properties, I'd avoid B-grade properties, and boy, C-grade properties, they should be avoided at all costs, even if they're in a great neighbourhood, unless your intention is to demolish the property and replace it with something more appropriate for that location. Now, that's the sort of investment that I do. So over the last years, other than the couple of blocks of apartments we bought, the only properties we bought are old dumps in great locations, old houses that we pull down and build two new townhouses. Now, one of the more recent ones we bought in Brisbane and paid $1.5 million for. I only got $150 rent for the first year while I'm getting the plans and development approvals in place. Boy, is it a dump. But I bought it for the land and boy, has it gone up in value. So some of the factors to look for when selecting the right property in that location are, well, first of all, buying below intrinsic value. You shouldn't overpay. That's why I avoid buying new or off the plan properties, which generally attract a big premium. I also look for properties with a high land to asset ratio. Yeah, I mentioned a moment ago that the last property I bought was a dump, but the land was what I actually bought it for. Now, remember, apartments also have an attributable land value underneath them. But if you buy in an apartment block where there's 300 apartments, boy, is it only a tiny amount of land attributed to each apartment because the developer's wanting to get as many apartments on as they can compared to the old, what used to be called flats, the apartments in the middle ring suburbs of our capital cities, particularly Melbourne and Sydney. They've got a 10th, a 12th of the block of land underneath them. So I look for properties below intrinsic value. I look for properties with a high land to asset ratio. And I love properties with a twist. I believe your investment should have something unique or special or different about it, some X factor that makes it stand out from the neighbours. That's what it has to do to land on my shortlist, because when it becomes available for lease or for sale in the future, you want it to stand out. For those who can afford it, I also believe you should be buying properties to which you can add value. You know, that's my preferred strategy. Now, even if you can't afford to do a renovation today, I'd rather you buy an older property, spend a bit more buying in a better location. The property's not in good condition because they can't take away the renovation potential from you to do in the future. Or in particular, I like pulling down old houses and building townhouses, which have got great depreciation benefits, and they're the preferred style of accommodation in the future moving forward. So back to the original question, where should you buy if you've got some money? Where do you want to invest in this next stage of the current property cycle? And I hope you understand that there isn't one good location, and that really it all starts with putting a plan together to help you get there. My suggestion is you have a chat with my team at Metropole to help you. As I said earlier on, it's just too hard to do it on your own. And the end result, the location and the property, will be the result of a whole lot of decisions that you're going to have to make along the way in the right order. It'll include having a financial plan put in place, a wealth plan put in place, an asset protection plan put in place. That's what a strategic property plan involves. Go to metropole.com.au and find out how we can help you. Then, if you want to, you can use our buyer's agency, wealth advisory, property management, renovations, development, business advisory division. We've got a whole lot of ways of helping you, but it all starts with having a chat with one of my team. Give us a call. Just click on the link at metropole.com.au and I'd love to be part of your wealth creation journey.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In my mindset message today, I'd like to explain to you about a chat I had with one of my nephews who suddenly is taking an interest in property and business and success. And he said, "What would you have liked to know years ago that would make things different today?" Now, that's a great question. And as I discussed things with him, I realized that the topics I was talking about really wasn't as much about property or money as it was about mindset. So these are some of the things I mentioned to him that I wish I had known then. And the first one was to become the pilot of your life, because then everything's going to change. I remember things changed for me when I learned that my thoughts lead to my feelings lead to my actions, and my actions lead to my results. This meant that my inner world, my thoughts and my feelings, controlled my outer world, my actions and my results. The turning point was when I realized that I was responsible for all things, the good and the bad that had happened to me. I then became the pilot of my life and not just a passenger. I also realized that even if it's not true, I know I act differently and my results are better because I believe I'm responsible for everything that happened to me. The second lesson I told Daniel was that When I was young, no one told me about this thing called the reticular activating system, that part of the brain that only lets you see in your surroundings what you focus on in your thoughts. It pretty much always helps you find what you're looking for. You know that story that if you were going to look for a white Toyota, you were going to buy a new car, all of a sudden on the street you'd see white Toyotas everywhere. It's the reticular activating system that looks for things that you focus on and blocks out other things. It pretty much always helps you find what you're looking for. It's your inbuilt GPS system. And so what I learned, and I would have liked to know it earlier in life, was the importance of setting goals and regularly reviewing them, because it's one way to keep your focus. It keeps you focused on what's important and helps you take actions that are going to move you closer towards where you want to go. The other lesson, I told him, was that your attitude changes your reality. It's that old glass half full or glass empty story. When things happen in life, things that we don't like, we can either choose to see them as a problem or as a solution waiting to be discovered. Now, to be blunt, it took me quite some time in my life to discover that if you change your attitude, you can actually change your reality. When you have a positive attitude instead of a negative one, you start to see things and viewpoints that were invisible before. At the moment, there's lots of challenges going on in the world, in life, but there always seem to be. But the optimistic people do much, much better in life in general than the pessimists. Another lesson I told him was the importance of giving. You've got to give to receive. As children, we're told that the joy is in giving rather than receiving. But as adults, for many of us, life becomes about what we can get out of somebody or something. However, if you want to increase the value you receive, look, it could be money, love, kindness, opportunities. You've got to increase the value that you give, because over time, what you get is in proportion to what you give out. While it would be nice to get something for nothing, over the years I learned that seldom happens. Another lesson I taught him was to be proactive rather than reactive. There seems to be three types of people out there: those who make things happen, those who watch what happens, and then there's those who sit around and say, hey, what just happened? Be in the first group. Be in that group of people who make things happen and always be on the lookout for opportunity. Two more lessons I gave him that I'd like to share with you. One is make your time count. How often have you heard people say time flies? Well, indeed it does, so use it wisely. Just as you're careful about how and where you invest your money, you should be careful about how you invest your time. Remember the Pareto principle, that 80-20 rule? It says that 80% of the value we receive comes from 20% of what we do with our time. So what things do you do? What do you spend your time doing that takes a lot of energy yet delivers few results? Cut those out and use your time wisely. Of course, that also means don't waste your time worrying, because most things you're worrying about are never going to happen. They're just monsters in your mind. If they do happen, they're most likely not going to be as bad as you expected. So now when you're confronted with a challenge, what you should do is put things in perspective. What I do, what I ask myself is, what's the worst that could happen? What's the best possible outcome? And what's the most likely thing that's going to happen? This means you shouldn't take things too seriously, because that which seems like a really big problem today, you may not even remember in 5 years' time. So lighten up a little bit. But the other lesson I taught him was mistakes mean growth. Sometimes negative experiences, mistakes and failures can be an even better way of achieving success, because they teach you something that another win, another success probably wouldn't teach you. However, we're so driven with getting things right that we fail to see the value when things go wrong. Instead, we spend our time wishing we'd done it differently or not doing anything because we're scared of having a mistake. So if things go wrong, learn from your mistakes is what I explained to him. Make it count. Do things differently next time. What I didn't tell him at the time, but I would have liked to, was one thing I'm going to share with you now, and that's don't compare yourself to others. That's one of the things I would have liked to know early too, because when you compare yourself to others, you let the outside world control how you feel about yourself. Clearly, with social media now and seeing everybody's what they eat and what they do and their cars and their lifestyle, it makes some people feel a little bit jealous. Remember, you're seeing people's highlight reels, not all the bits on the cutting room floor. So instead of trying to compare yourself with other people. Strive to be the best that you can be and look at how far you've come, what you've achieved, what you've accomplished. And they're the lessons that I would have liked to know many years ago. And if I've shared them with you and now you're aware of those, maybe it will help you just get that bit of success a little bit sooner. Well, I hope you got some benefit from my chat about where you should buy your next investment property and how to look at things differently to most investors, and also about what I would have liked to have known when I first started off. And if you did, and you know somebody else who'd benefit from this information, please let them know about this. Please join me in my quest to make as many people as possible financially literate so they can also enjoy the fruits of what our property markets and our economy and Australia has got to offer. Now, if you'd like to understand a bit more about property and property investment, I've got a bonus for you, my way of saying thank you for subscribing to the show. Just go to podcastbonus.com.au if you haven't already, podcastbonus.com.au, and you can pick up a bundle of ebooks and reports. I'll be back again real soon, but you can catch me in between on social media. Just look for Michael Yardney, and why not join me in my private Facebook group, where every day I leave some tips and some information I don't leave elsewhere. Just go to Facebook and look for the Property Update private Facebook group. I'll be back again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney Podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney Podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?